Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
It's actually a little bit of a cool day. It's overcast here today on, this is the Thursday, the very beginning of ForkFest. So it's going from the 14th through the 18th. So it'll be Monday will be the last day of this event. It's definitely not too late for you to get on up here and grab yourself a campsite or an RV site and come up and join the event.
And when you say that Monday is the last day, you mean through Monday night.
Through Monday,
there are events happening. So
sure. There's a party Monday night.
You can stay through Tuesday.
Through Tuesday, I guess. Yeah, yes. I guess we should say that. Anyway, so it's Ian and Daryl here on our remote site, Site 45 here at the campground. We got everything
RV
all set
site.
Up. RV, yeah. That's
because there are RV sites and tent sites.
Correct.
And if somebody's wandering around the tent area looking for us, they will not find us
45 there, yeah. So we're going to tell you more about the event as the show goes on here tonight. But last night you weren't able to be on the program. We had TJ the Spy sitting in for you. And there was definitely a story that you'd found worthy of discussion all the way from California. What's the news?
Yeah, and we actually talked about this a couple of months ago, I think, when they were going through the petitioning process for qualifying the three California's proposal for the ballot.
As opposed to the California secession proposal,
correct,
which is another proposal they're trying to get signatures for.
And you may recall a couple of years ago, there was the six California's proposal. Tim Draper, the Silicon Valley venture capitalist who sponsored the ballot measure, said three states will get us better infrastructure, better education, and lower taxes. He added that states will be more accountable to us and can cooperate and compete for citizens. In the initiative's introductory passage, Draper argues that vast parts of California are poorly served by a representative government dominated by a large number of elected representatives from a small part of our state, both geographically and economically. The proposal aims to invoke Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution, the provision guiding how an existing state can be divided into a new state or states. Draper's plan calls for three new entities. Tentatively, and these names can be changed, tentatively referred to as Northern California, California, and Southern California, which would roughly divide the population of the existing state into thirds.
Really? Okay.
And they do have maps, and I think two of the new states have populations of about 12.3 million, and the other is just over 13.
Okay.
So fairly equally divided as far as population. Northern California, I think, would be the largest geographically.
We do know that some of our listeners have shown up earlier in this week, so there are probably some people on this campground who are already here and who've been here for a few days, just because they wanted to maximize the amount of time that they have here in New Hampshire, because they probably come from places like California, places that are not so free. In fact, California ranked as the number 49 least free state in the United States. And so I wonder how the split, if the three-level split here that they're proposing that's going on the ballot, I believe it's this year, right?
This year, yes.
So California voters are going to have the opportunity to register their opinion about the question of, should California split into three? Now, wait a minute. Correct me here on this one, Daryl, if I'm wrong, because I know that some of these proposals in the past have been like, we want to propose that we propose the idea, meaning that they would put on the ballot the idea of having another vote on the question.
No. You're talking about the secession proposals that have been, we want to hold a special referendum to secede.
Right. So they were asking people if they wanted to hold a special referendum. In this case, would this go ahead and approve this idea if
this would send the request to Congress.
To the U.S. Congress?
That's what is required for a new state to be created from an existing state, is it requires congressional approval.
Okay.
Now, I want to touch briefly on this. The random sampling of signatures.
Yeah.
That's something that most other states do when looking at signatures. Instead of going one by one and verifying every single signature, they'll just randomly, all right, let's check the fifth signature on page 3 and the 12th signature on this. And if a certain number of those come back as invalid, then they'll do a more detailed check.
Okay.
But if, you know, the overwhelming majority come back valid, all right, we're assuming they're good.
Time saver. Okay.
Unless somebody challenges,
right,
and then they can go through. Continuing on, the cost of Draper's 2018 effort is still unclear. While he spent almost $4.9 million of his own money on the unsuccessful drive in 2014, state records show through December reports of only $559,000. That was before petition circulation intensified in the spring. Article here from the LA Times says that if voters approve the ballot measure, the effort would need to be given the blessing of both houses of the California legislature. Draper's proposal says the initiative...
Before it goes to Congress.
Yes.
Okay.
But there might be a way that it can avoid that. The article continues. Draper's proposal says the initiative, acting under California's constitutional power of voters to write their own laws, would serve as legislative consent. That interpretation would likely end up in court.
The interpretation that it was the people doing their own legislating?
Right, because something in California's constitution, and they don't cite what article, and I haven't
take
read
their word for it.
But there's something in the constitution that gives the people of California the approval to write their own laws, and that would serve as legislative consent. It's kind of like how California wound up getting their medical marijuana, and their legal marijuana was ballot initiatives, where the voters acted as the legislature. Because they wrote their own laws. From there, whether it goes to a court or goes through the California legislature, from there it would go to Congress for congressional approval. The increase in the size of the Senate, they say, would dilute the power of other states and increase the power of what used to be a single state if those senators banded together. Well, don't most of the senators wind up banding together with other senators because, you know,
welcome,
they're part of a party and they've agreed to do whatever the leader of the caucus tells them to do?
Right.
Presidential politics could also doom the proposal once it reached Washington.
Did the same objections come up when, you know, the Virginias split? Were the same objections made at the U.S. Senate?
Probably not, because... you know, that was during the midst of the Civil War, and, you know, that's part of why the Congress didn't act upon the 1859 vote to split California, because there was fear that the southern portion of the state might join the Confederacy and then give them coast to coast and some kind of something. Vikram Amar, law professor who has written extensively about Draper's plan, pointed out last fall that the shift in California's votes in the Electoral College, which have been awarded for a quarter century to Democratic nominees, would now be split between three states. And one of those states, based on past election results, could be won by a Republican.
OMG. You were just telling us about the Puerto Rico and...
Yeah, the last plebiscite that they had on changing their status, where right now they are officially a territory that is recognized as a Commonwealth something, not that Commonwealth makes a difference from a legal standpoint. But a couple of years ago, they had a plebiscite where it was a two-question plebiscite. Question one is, do you want to change the current political status of Puerto Rico? Yes or no? And then, if yes wound up winning, then the results of question two would wind up being enacted. And question two was statehood, independence, or independence and free association with the United States, which is what Micronesia, Palau, and one other place that I never can remember which one. They are technically independent countries, but, you know, there's certain
things. They use the dollar.
They have
a post office, I think.
And so question two was actually boycotted by the pro-independence crowd, as I understand it. And that led to statehood getting something like 60% of the vote.
Okay.
So there are some people saying, well, it's not legitimate because this, or it is, or whatnot. But in either case, Congress has failed to act, and I don't think Congress will ever act.
Huh.
Critics have long wondered how citizens of a state where the majority of water supplies exist in one region would react if negotiations over new interstate compacts to share the resources turned contentious. College students who live in cities like Fresno may balk at being charged out-of-state tuition at UCLA. A San Diego company with an office in San Francisco would find itself facing two corporate tax structures and workplace regulations that a northern state might impose differently than one in the south. Draper's fascination with splitting California into separate states has been his only real foray into state politics, though he served briefly on the State Board of Education for 1 year in 1998. The 60-year-old entrepreneur, who is registered as an unaffiliated voter, often is identified as an early adopter of viral marketing in the 1990s and was an early investor in technology companies like Skype and Hotmail.
Hmm.
Do you remember Hotmail? Is that still around?
I mean, I never used it. That's Microsoft's product now.
Recently, Draper has been an outspoken advocate for cryptocurrencies.
Good.
Like Bitcoin.
Excellent, excellent. I'm liking this guy more and more. I love the mosquito racket. They are so cheap. They're like $5 for these. You know, for those that don't know, maybe you live in a place where there aren't mosquitoes. Is there such a place?
Antarctica.
Yeah, because they're pretty prevalent here in New Hampshire. It's not like the cold kills them. They just go into hibernation or something
right.
like that. I don't know what happens to mosquitoes during the wintertime, but they come back. And normally here in at Rogers Campground, the mosquitoes, actually, they're not so bad here. They're really not so bad because we're not being swarmed by them.
Right.
So, you know, we've got our trusty mosquito rackets at hand just in case they do show up. And if you want to show up and join us, you can. And that's one of the other nice things about being here out in the campground is we're actually more likely to be seen. People are more likely to remember we're here because, well, out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
In this case, we're in sight. We got a nice big red tent and we're under it. And the rain has stopped again. So that's good news here at Rogers Campground. Again, you can't get a better view than this. I mean, this view is absolutely incredible at Rogers Campground. We're surrounded by the White Mountains of New Hampshire. It's very, very lovely here. And so you don't want to miss it. If you can come up here this weekend, we're going to be here throughout the weekend. We'll be here Monday and probably leaving early Tuesday morning to head back to Keene. The Stanford Prison Experiment, I mean, it's a horrible, horrifying experiment,
yes.
But it's fascinating as well. And something we've talked about on a multitude of occasions over the years here on Free Talk Live, it's a study that they made. The guy who did the study, I think, is Phil Zimbardo.
Yes.
He made a really great website about it years ago, and it has, like, original photos and
video
and, you know, his interpretation and his writings and, you know, his sort of recap of it over the years. Fascinating story. I'm sure they're going to recap what it is here. In fact, they do. So I'll just share the story here from Vox rather than recapping it and then recapping again.
Right.
The Stanford Prison Experiment, one of the most famous and compelling psychological studies of all time, told us a tantalizingly simple story about human nature. The study took paid participants and assigned them to be inmates or guards in a mock prison at Stanford University.
Randomly assigned them. So they
Correct.
Didn't do some kind of thing of, oh, you're kind of a wimp, so therefore inmate. You're
right.
A big, bulky jock guy, so therefore prison guard.
Yeah, and the people who had signed up didn't know they were going to be in a prison experiment either, right? Like, they just showed up to get paid to do an experiment. They didn't know what it was going to be.
I think they had some kind of idea, but they weren't
usually
really sure entirely what was involved.
Usually they don't give you any kind of info like that up front. But soon after the experiment began, the guards began mistreating the prisoners. From Vox.com, where they say an expose published recently at Medium.com, based on previously unpublished recordings of Phil Zimbardo, who's the Stanford psychologist who ran the infamous Stanford Prison Experiment, saying here that also interviews with his participants reveal some evidence that they call convincing. That's Vox saying it's convincing evidence that the guards in the experiment were coached to be cruel, that it wasn't some naturally occurring phenomenon that was coaching. It also shows the experiment's most memorable moment of a prisoner descending into a screaming fit, proclaiming, "I'm burning up inside," was the result of the prisoner acting. Quote, I took it as a kind of an improv exercise, one of the guards told reporter Ben Blum. I believed that I was doing what the researchers wanted me to do. Unquote. The findings have long been subject to scrutiny. Many think of them as a more dramatic demonstration, a sort of academic reality show, than a serious bit of science. But these new revelations incited an immediate response. Quote, we must stop celebrating this work, unquote, said to personality psychologist Simine Vazir in response to the article. She says it's anti-scientific. Get it out of the textbooks.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy, so I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
Many of the classic show-stopping experiments in psychology have lately turned out to be wrong, fraudulent, or outdated. And in recent years, social scientists have begun to reckon with the truth that their old work needs a redo, the replication crisis. But there's been a lag in the popular consciousness and in how psychology is taught by teachers and textbooks. It's time to catch up, says Vox. They say here that the Zimbardo prison experiment is not the only classic study that has been recently scrutinized, reevaluated, or outright exposed as a fraud. Recently, science journalist Gina Perry found the infamous Robber's Cave experiment in the 1950s, in which young boys at summer camp were essentially manipulated into joining warring factions, was a do-over from a failed previous version of an experiment which the scientists never mentioned in the academic paper. That's a glaring omission. It's wrong to throw out data that refutes your hypothesis and then only publicize the data that supports it. Perry has also revealed inconsistencies in another major early work in psychology, the Milgram electroshock test, in which participants were told by an authority figure to deliver seemingly lethal doses of electricity to an unseen hapless soul. Now, for those that aren't familiar with the experiment, the unseen person was a Confederate. They were part of the experiment. They weren't actually being shocked.
Correct.
They were just acting.
But the person turning the knob didn't know that the person on
Correct.
The other side of this glass that appears to be dead is in on.
They didn't see it. They heard. Somewhat ironically, the new revelations about the prison experiment also show the power of an authority figure, in this case Zimbardo himself and his warden, has in manipulating others to be cruel.
Hold on. Zimbardo was serving as the warden.
That's
Why'd
correct.
They say Zimbardo and his warden?
Zimbardo did remove himself at one point, and I think they ended it shortly thereafter.
Yeah, like
so
a
I think that
day
maybe it's
two.
A writing style. They're referring
okay.
to Zimbardo in both cases, his warden being the character he was playing.
Okay.
For those that don't know the study, the Stanford Prison Experiment, as we mentioned before, ostensibly showed that people placed randomly in positions of authority would embrace that authority and use it sadistically.
Right.
And Zimbardo got involved as the warden in that case and lost himself, lost sight of his goals of the
right.
project. And he himself started acting like a prison
warden. His girlfriend is actually
yeah.
the one that convinced him to end.
Stop.
The
to
experiment.
Stop it early. To stop it early.
Like a week early. And yeah. Zimbardo was an expert witness in the Abu Ghraib testimonies,
mm-hmm.
To where he said, because there were the claims of the U.S. government, we never told our guards to torture people in Abu Ghraib.
And he
Zimbardo
would say, you didn't
said,
have to.
You didn't have to.
Right. You put them in a place with no consequences for their actions.
I'm sad to hear that Davy Barker's not going to be here.
Oh,
but
boo.
You know, he came up with the idea for this experiment to where you would have people in a test waiting area, and then they would see something on a TV screen that was someone being assaulted in a hallway.
Hmm.
And what he wanted to test was the frequency, so the control
group. Was the hallway supposed to be like a live feed from the same facility?
So the hallway right next to where the waiting room is.
Yeah, okay.
And it would be able to be recognized of, oh, wait, that's
right
the
there.
Hallway that
yeah.
I just came in.
Yeah.
So the control would be just two people in regular dress
mm-hmm.
that get into some kind of scuffle.
Okay.
how many people respond by jumping into the hallway.
Right. Versus a cop.
Versus
or something.
If it's someone wearing a uniform of some type, yeah, how many people would go out? And he's just not been able to raise the funding to
sure
actually wind up doing it because, again, it's controversial.
Sure.
And it's not easy to wind up doing.
Nevertheless, in so many of these cases, scientists have moved on and corrected errors and are still doing well-intentioned work to understand the heart of humanity. For instance, work on one of psychology's oldest fixations, dehumanization, the ability to see another as less than human, continues with methodological rigor, helping us understand the modern-day maltreatment of Muslims and immigrants in America. Replication attempts at the Stanford Prison study, on the other hand, have been a mess, and they link to a story about that. In science, too often the first demonstration of an idea becomes the lasting one, in both pop culture and academia, but this isn't how science is supposed to work at all. Science is a frustrating, iterative process. When we communicate it, we need to get beyond the idea that a single stunning study ought to last the test of time. And that's true.
Yes.
Scientists know this as well, but they're...
But we have evidence, like circumstantial evidence, historical evidence, that people will follow outrageous orders if given by an authority figure.
That hospital.
What's that?
Yeah.
Bomb the hospital. It's happened numerous times.
Keep bombing the hospital. I mean, the orders have come in. That's not a hospital you're looking at that looks remarkably like a hospital. That's where the hospital previously was. It's something else. Bomb it. And then, some yucker do who's 22 years old, out of basic training or whatever, says, all right, keep loading the artillery and we'll keep bombing the hospital.
Scientists know this as well, but their institutions have often discouraged them from replicating old work instead of the pursuit of new and exciting, attention-grabbing studies. Journalists are part of the problem, too, imbuing small, insignificant studies with more importance and meaning than they're due. And who hasn't seen the blazing headlines about some new study with the word "may" right there in the headline?
Right.
Random dogs running about, which we'll see what Jazzy thinks about this. This is like a little, what's that thing, a miniature pincher?
Yeah.
Take her off her leash.
That's a greyhound.
Take her off her leash. Let her go.
No. We do not.
Jazzy can't catch that dog. Just take her off her leash.
No.
She's going to have fun. Take her off. If I were over there, I'd take her off the damn leash, but I'm not over on that side. Let her run after the little dog. She's not going to be able to catch it. She could use the exercise. Jazzy is the studio bee. She's 14 years old. She's a good dog. She's not going to hurt anybody else's dog. And Mark, your mic wasn't on, so now it is.
It's an Italian greyhound. They're small, and their bones tend to break.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jazzy will be fine. That dog's going to run circles around.
That dog is literally running circles around Jazzy.
Quite literally.
Now, you're not supposed to let dogs off the leash, but we don't really care. It's Fork Fest, so there are no rules. Of course, the campground does technically have rules, but as long as both dog owners consent, then I don't see what the problem is.
And it appears that the dogs are both consenting
now. Yeah, they're just having themselves a good old
campgrounds
time.
Tend to have lots of rules that they really don't abide by. They're just there in case something goes wrong.
In case something happens. Yeah, for sure. And the fact is, if your dog's off its leash and it encounters a dog that is going to snap at it or whatever, then, hey, you shouldn't have let your dog off the leash.
Yeah.
So
the rule was there.
That's why the rule's there is, to give people that protection. Almost five decades later, the Milgram experiments with their famous simulations of powerful electric shocks are among the most well-known studies of the 20th century. That much is definitely true. No introductory psych course or textbook can get away with skipping them. The experiments have inspired plays, a William Shatner movie, episodes of reality television, a storyline on Law and Order, special issues of academic journals, at least one novel, and two pop songs that I can find. The lyrics to Peter Gabriel's 1986 track, We Do What We're Told, Milgram's 37, neatly sums up Milgram's findings, at least as they have been absorbed by popular culture. Quote, we do what we're told, we do what we're told, we do what we're told, told to do. In the 1970s, Milgram suggested that his findings help explain American military atrocities in Vietnam. More recently, they found new life, a staple of debates about torture at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo.
So, I feel that the reporting on the Milgram experiment was valuable in that it gives people the opportunity to question what they're told. It's difficult when you're just like, you know, middle management, for instance. You're part of a decision-making group. Mm-hmm. Middle managers do matter. They don't matter a lot, but they matter some. And, the difficulty that it is to change people's thoughts. So if you're in a group of four people and you're the only one that thinks a particular thing, you're going to have a very difficult time. My wife is dealing with a situation right now where her father and mother are trying to sell their house. They got an offer that was 12.5% below their asking price, and they feel insulted. This is too low. I can't believe that our real estate agent would bring us this offer. Somehow or another, they called her brother and got him on board. So now you've got three out of the four people believing that this is an insult and that a woman should put her real estate license in jeopardy by not bringing an offer that is insulting to, I don't know. I don't even understand the point of view that an offer that is 12.5% below asking price is somehow an insult.
While deception in experiments was a mainstay of psychological research up through the 1960s, most deception-based studies didn't end up on the front page of the New York Times. And none had involved tricking people into thinking they'd harmed, maybe even killed, a fellow human.
I think it's important to note here that Free Talk Live has talked about the Milgram experiment for well over a decade.
Yeah.
And that we're reading this because we have questions, right? Because we enjoy questioning our own conclusions, and that's what I'm told smart people do. I want to know whether I've been
wrong.
I want
to know what the critique is.
Yeah.
Going on here. So Milgram noted that his experiments all ended with a de-hoaxing session, but this wasn't sufficient for his critics. In 1973, the American Psychological Association passed new research guidelines, effectively banning the type of deception on which his obedience work had relied. This did not, however, stop Obedience to Authority, which was his book in 1974 about the experiments, from becoming a bestseller, nor did it stop universities from inviting him to speak. It's not clear what they mean by coerce here, but if they
probably aren't using the libertarian definition of coerce, which means physical force.
If they are going off script, that is something worth quibbling, right?
Indeed.
They're supposed to say something very specific, and if they're improvising, that breaks the study.
It doesn't break the study. It changes the parameters of
the study. It could invalidate the results.
I don't know that it invalidates the results.
It could, I said.
Are there words that you can string together to get somebody to push a button to kill people?
Yes. Inconsistency in the standards meant that the line between obedience and disobedience was shifting from subject to subject and from variation to variation.
Agreed.
And that the famous 65% compliance rate had less to do with human nature than with arbitrary semantic distinctions. The wrinkles in Milgram's research...
What it says is that, that some people can be coerced into shocking somebody, and depending on the words that they are told.
So I could guarantee that... if this experiment were replicated today and you had some guy wearing a shiny badge that said, I'm going to have to ask you to push that button, a vast majority of people would push the button.
I think
it doesn't
you're right.
matter if you say the experiment requires you to push the button. Whatever words you want to use here, the fact that people were complying with what they thought was giving a lethal voltage, that is... horrible.
Why might a person obey one order but not another?
Verbiage, tone of voice, their mood, health concerns, a whole variety of things would cost them.
Because they had agreed to initially, and then they realized that they didn't...
People love this. That this is one of the things. You agreed to something you weren't entirely clear on beforehand, and now you must do it. I think about the sergeants in boot camp are constantly bringing up one's contract when you're in the military.
Right, so that there's this thing called informed consent.
Yeah.
Meaning that you have all of the information that is needed, and if you don't have all of the information, that's not... informed consent.
And part of you can never really have informed consent, right? Like if you ever sign a contract about what's going to occur in the future, how can you be sure that a person's going to do what they're going to do if you're always looking for this informed consent
thing?
Right,
but that there are circumstances where you can have more information
yeah, sure.
than if somebody just withholds all kinds of details. Hey, Mark, I've got a car to sell you.
Yeah.
Do you want to buy it for a dollar?
Yeah, it sounds like a great thing. It happens to have a body in the trunk.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.